Evening. Thank you, John, for that bit of review, making sure the blanks were full. I told one of the ushers tonight that I got to get a move on. This is actually session four that we're covering tonight, and this is Thursday night, and we've got three more evenings and six more sessions, seven counting tonight's. So I told him, I said, I'm going on too many rabbit trails. He said, you got to shoot them rabbits. We're going to try and shoot some rabbits tonight. How many of you, I didn't mention it again last night, I caught it again today, at the end of our lesson yesterday, at the bottom of the page, on your own, I asked the question, should we become like them if we want to win them? And then I said, be prepared to discuss this question in our next session. How many of you noticed that and you gave that some thought? Raise your hand if you did. Put your hands up high if you did. Okay, not very many. And that's my fault again. I just spaced that out and drawing attention to that. What are your thoughts just off the top of your head? Should we become like them to win them? I know it's so hard to get a discussion going, and we don't have time for a long discussion, but I would like to hear a few of your thoughts. As long as it does not contradict the truth. Okay. Define like them. Appearance. Let's go with that. Appearance. Lifestyle. Okay, one of the speakers last weekend said, no, don't become like them, but be genuine. Our lifestyle should adjust instead of sticking out like a sore thumb American. Very good answers, all very good. I think one student said one time, and I thought it was really good, that we should picture what they will look like once they become Christians, once they follow the Word of God within their culture. And we should become no more like them than that. That would be the limit. Doesn't mean we have to become that, but picture what they look like. In other words, you're going to witness to someone in the hip-hop culture. So should you get your ear pierced, get your nose pierced, wear a bunch of bling-bling around your neck? Some people would say yes, but once they become followers of Jesus Christ, become born again, as John said, that should go according to the Word of God. And so we don't do that. Whatever needs to go when they become Christians, don't become that, because that's only confusing. I would like to share with you, I've often said that I'm a great defender of our young people. I really believe that our young people have hearts after God, and I'll stand up for them every time. And I want to share with you how some of my former students answered that question. And this will give you courage for the future of our young people. At least it does me. These are all young people from probably anywhere from 19 to 30 probably. And they're answering that question, all right? There's nothing more square than a conservative Christian trying to act hip. And one student, quoting from Romans 12:2, English New Testament, stop assuming an outward expression that does not come from within you and is not representative of what you are in your inner being, but is patterned after this age. Stop being ungenuine. Be genuine. Be who you are. Trying to fit in again shows a lack of faith in the power of the gospel. Perhaps we find the church today using persuasive, enticing words because she has lost God's dunamis. That's the power of the Holy Ghost. Maybe we're trying to persuade and use enticing words because we've lost the power. A Christian who has the joy of the Lord on his face is real will have something to offer these kids, and I believe that. And that's good for all of you that work with the club kids. Have the joy of the Lord on your face. Be real. In order to win the youth of today, our focus cannot be on being like them. It must be on being like Christ. These are young people sharing these thoughts. But as we understand the teen culture, we see that what they are longing for more than anything is authenticity. And I believe that. Our young people want something that's real. Becoming like them would be counterproductive. They don't need us to be like them. However, they do need to know that someone genuinely cares for them. Amen. And yet, some of the coolest kids in my church youth group are the ones who seem the most discontent. Isn't that the truth? Tonight, we want to talk about my culture and the call of Christ. We're going to read the foundational statement a little bit further into the lesson. So you can wait to read that until we have it on the overhead. Last evening's session was humorous. I always enjoy last evening's session. And I have yet to have the volunteers not cooperate because it's the integrated system. Culture is inside of you. It's part of you. You cannot separate it from who you are. I want you to get that. You cannot separate it from who you are. We're going to talk about that a little bit later tonight. But as much as last night was humorous, tonight is probably one of the more difficult ones for me to talk about. And I'll tell you why. Because we're trying to address this problem that we have that we haven't done well. Our churches are not very productive in winning community people into our churches and keeping them. What are we doing wrong? What could we do better? That's what we want to be looking at in this whole series. Tonight I would like to look for a little bit about what we are doing wrong. Your defenses, especially, I think probably the older you are, older ones, your defenses will go up. That's part of being culture. Whenever anyone's culture is called into question, we become defensive. It's like talking to young people about music. And you know, I do that too. And their defenses go up. You know how that is. You talk to a young person about their music. If you are at all critical about their music, their defenses go up. Why? Because it's part of them. You cannot criticize their music without criticizing them. Music is just that much a part of us. It's the same with culture. It's who you are. And if whenever our culture is called into question, it's normal to become defensive. And we have to get over that. We're going to talk about that when we talk about overcoming ethnocentrism. We have to get over that, because as we reach out to other cultures, they are going to question my culture. We have to get over that. If my defenses go up, I'm not going to win that person to the Lord. So tonight I invite you to bear with me. I experienced some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight. I've experienced myself. And so I want to keep me out of it. And so that's probably one of the reasons why it's hard for me to share. And it's also hard for me to share because I do not want young people, I do not want you to think that I am anti-Mennonite. I am not. I'm Mennonite by choice. I believe, no doubt, that what we say we believe is 100% biblical. I believe that. Can we improve? Absolutely, because we don't live sometimes what we know. And we're going to talk about some of that tonight. So young people, that's one of the reasons I struggle with this, is because I don't want to throw fire. If you're struggling and you're kind of critical about the church, let me say at the beginning, quit being critical, because you have something to offer this world today. All right? But we don't get it all. We don't do it perfectly all the time. So we're going to talk about that tonight. It's a little bit like a surgeon. Yeah, from what I understand, I'm not a surgeon. Katrina could maybe help me on this a little bit, but I think that when a surgeon is going to work on this infected area, whatever it is, they have to cut away. Maybe they're going to use a laser, but they have to cut away all the diseased and infected skin so that healing can begin. I do know that when you do body work and you have a little tiny rust speck and you ask the body man to fix that, you'll watch him take a grinder to that rust speck and it gets bigger and the paint goes off. And by the time he's done, you've got about a 2-inch hole in the side of your car, because he has to get rid of all that bad metal before he can fix it. Tonight, we're going to look at some areas that we need to do better in. Pleasant? No. Necessary? Yes. How many of you would like to be more effective in bringing community people into our churches and keeping them? Would you like to be? I believe that beyond a shadow of a doubt. How could we do it differently? If we do the same thing, this is a business concept, but it's true in the church. If we continue to do the same things that we've been doing, we're going to get the same results. How many of you are happy with the results? So we must look at things and decide what we need to change. That's what we'd like to do a little bit tonight. We're going to look at my culture, the Mennonite culture, and the call to the supraculture of the kingdom. You see, we get things mixed up. I think too much in the past, we have so linked our culture and said it's the sum total of Christianity. We don't need to change anything because we are Christian. We're going to see some things tonight, I hope, that even as the people, the Nicaraguan culture needs to come to the super culture of Jesus Christ. And Ken's going to go there, try and show them the way. and call them to the superculture of the kingdom. Even as they're called, the subculture of Mennonites are also called to the superculture of the kingdom. And we must press in to the culture that is spelled out, that is shared with us. We must press into that culture that is shared with us through this word by God himself, the kingdom principles. We have to press into that. We don't own it already. We're not there. We're not there. We have to press into it just like anyone else. So, we have to differentiate between when I call this person to the kingdom, the superculture of the kingdom, I have to be so very careful that I don't call them to my subculture first, and then this is the path that we take them to the kingdom. They're called to the kingdom, just like I'm called to the kingdom. The biblical things that we have are not Mennonite. The veiling is not Mennonite. It's a principle of the kingdom. Modesty is not Mennonite. It's a principle of the kingdom. Non-resistance is not Mennonite. It's part of the superculture of the kingdom. And whoever we call, whatever culture we call, we're not calling them to the Mennonite culture. If they choose to apply the kingdom cultural principles the way that we apply them, praise the Lord. Differentiate between it. How can we do that? Let's read some true life experiences. I didn't make these up. These are true life experiences of people who wanted to. I should back up so that you're not reading ahead. And you listen to the introduction. These are people who were not raised in a Mennonite setting, an Anabaptist setting, people from the community who were interested, hungry, desired to come into a Mennonite church. I want you to, as we read their testimonies, I want you to see if you can see a thread. See if you can identify a thread. Put a word to it, to a thread that you see in these testimonies. And I'm going to ask you for that thread when we're done reading them. One mother of three children wanted to visit a Mennonite church. She cautiously peeked in the door. In her own words, she was scared to death. She said, "I had no idea if they would accept me." Why did she feel that way? Why did she feel that way? One young couple wanting to visit a Mennonite church said how nervous we were. We selected the plainest clothing we owned and expected that our bright yellow Honda would be quite out of place in the church parking lot. Why did they feel that way? A black pastor in a large city said, and this is not Daniel Pollard, so don't think it is. A black pastor in a large city said, "When I grew up, the word Mennonite conjured up an image of a white man in plain clothes or a woman in a prayer veil with Swiss German ethnic heritage and always a farmer. There was no way I could buy into that culture." Why did he think that? Why did he think? One sister says, "I experienced the loneliness of an outsider when my husband and I visited in the home of a family who spoke Pennsylvania Dutch. I did not understand the friendly chit-chat of the women in the kitchen while we prepared dinner. I felt left out, hurt, and maybe a bit angry that no one seemed to notice or care about my plight." And I can relate to that. because too often we're a little bit proud that we speak Pennsylvania Dutch. And we don't care who's in our presence, I'm going to speak it. Is that a part of the superculture of the kingdom? That attitude? Anyway, see, I'm commenting, and I'm not supposed to comment on this. I want you to identify the threat. One man left the church because he felt that he would always be a second-rate Mennonite. He approached the minister and told him that if he could assure him that he would not always feel second-rate, he would stay. The minister sadly told him that he could not assure him that the day would come when he would be totally accepted by their church. One man became convinced that he would never fit in because the people he was trying to become a part of would continually speak a strange language in his presence. Do you see a thread? Give me some words that would describe the thread you see. Unaccepted? Exclusive? I thought I heard one over here. Unaccepted, exclusive, closed. Inconsiderate. Ignorant. And not in a stupid way. You don't mean it that way. Yeah, very good. Very good words. You said them, not me, okay? Those are true life experiences. I know of some others. How many of you remember Lee Atkins, those of you that used to be at Sandy Ridge at the old church? Lee Atkins. And the first time he came to church, he sat in his car pondering if he should go in or not. And I think he was about ready to leave. And Brother Ken went over to his car and said, "Aren't you coming in? Come in." He invited him in, and he came in. And Lee was with us for several years. He would have left. How many of you remember Ray and Nancy Crass? Ray told me that they wanted to visit the North Liberty Church. And you remember where the church used to be. They had the store parking lot across the road, you remember? And Ray and Nancy, the first couple of times, they didn't go to church. They drove, parked in that parking lot, and just watched the people go in. They did that, if I remember right, at least twice before they conjured up the courage to go in. Why do we? We are different. Okay? So is Islam. And yet Islam is the fastest growing religion among college-age people today in the United States of America. Go figure that one out. It's really easy for us, again, to become defensive and say things like, you know, "Well, we're different. We can't help that. We're different." Oh? You're telling me that when somebody is hungry, spiritually hungry, that they can't feel comfortable? Somehow they felt comfortable to come to Jesus. They didn't hesitate to come to Jesus. They flocked to Jesus. Aren't we supposed to be like Jesus? What could we do differently? We must dispel, get rid of, the idea that we're so exclusive, we don't accept people. We can't communicate that. We cannot communicate that. We have to do better. Part of it, a lot of it, I didn't hear this word. I was hoping to hear it. Attitude. Often we carry an attitude that closes people out. And I hope that we can get over that. That's what ethnocentrism is. It's an attitude. That what I have is correct. It's the best way of all ways. We have to get over that. So the problem, I want you to follow me here. Let's not get critical about who we are as Mennonites. Let's get critical about the way we think of who we are. Does that make sense? Let's get critical about my attitude. That's where the problem lies. Not in what we do. It's not in what we do. We have to get past that. I want to read a couple paragraphs from our textbook that you don't have. Page 111, Hebert says this: "We know much about our culture, but we are largely unaware of the deep assumptions we make about the nature of reality." Now, stop there for a minute. I want to explain that. Do you get what he's saying? We are largely unaware of the real world. We are largely unaware of the deep assumptions we make about the nature of reality. We make a lot of assumptions about the real world, and that's all they are, is assumptions. We must, therefore, study, what we're going to do tonight, our own world view, if we wish to uncover the misunderstandings and the ethnocentrism that arise when we serve in another culture. We have to study ourselves. It's not pleasant. Might get a little defensive. But we must do it if we wish to uncover the misunderstandings, the misunderstandings we just read about from personal testimonies. How many of you wish, to use that word, that we could do better at that and get rid of those misunderstandings and have people coming in here every Sunday, and not just here, the visiting churches that are represented here? Would you like to get rid of those misunderstandings that people have about us? Would you like to? I would too. Therefore, we must do what we're going to do tonight. North American culture has been deeply molded by Christianity. Did you catch that? Therefore, it's real easy for us as Mennonites to think that we're Christian just by being Mennonite. North American culture has been deeply molded by Christianity. But let's just drop, just so we get it. Replace North American culture with Mennonite subculture, all right? Mennonite subculture has been deeply molded by Christianity, but it is not intrinsically a Christian culture. Is that a little hard for you to swallow? You see, we have to press into the supraculture of the kingdom like any other culture. We are not intrinsically a Christian culture. I will prove that to you in a minute. You'll prove it to yourself. We must critically examine. That does not mean in a criticizing way, but it means in a minutely way. We need to not miss a jot or a tittle. We need to examine it in the light of Scripture. We need to examine our culture. If we do not, we are likely to confuse it with the gospel, and I think that's what we've done. In our mission outreaches, and introduce a culture-bound gospel to others. I've lamented for years, and I told you the first night, I am not criticizing anyone who left home and went down to Central America or South America in missions. God bless them, and they did the best they knew how. I'm not criticizing. Could they have done better? I'm sure every single one of them would say, yes, we could have done better. You know what we've done? For years, we get those newsletters, right? And I would look at them and I'd read them and I'd see this picture of this little tiny church. This mission outreach has been going for 30 years. And I see this picture of this little tiny church. Maybe there's 10 people. And we've got them dressed like northern Indiana Mennonites. And they're down there in Central and South America. Now, the Bible, the superculture of the kingdom, folks, calls us to modesty. That's not Mennonite. That's the kingdom principles. Our cape dress is an application of that modesty. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when I think that that's the only definition and that the church down in Central and South America must dress that way also, I am doing nothing but introducing a culture-bound gospel. It's no different than the Judaizers. Maybe that'll help us see it a little clearer. It's no different than the Judaizers who wanted to bring in the Jewish traditions into the gospel. We have to do better. So let's look at our culture tonight. Are you struggling with what Hebert says? That Mennonite subculture has been deeply molded by Christianity. It has been. But it is not intrinsically a Christian culture. Willimon says this. This is your foundational statement at the beginning. There's a few quotes out there that I love so much that I like to say that, boy, I wished I would have said that. You know, I wish this would be my quote. This is so good. Willimon says this, "The Bible doesn't want to speak to the modern world. The Bible wants to convert, to change the modern world. The gospel is a culture. It is shared knowledge. It tells us where our affections should be, and it tells us what we should be valuing. The gospel is a culture. Christianity is a culture. It's a super culture. Every culture needs to press into it. You cannot know Christianity by having it translated into some other medium, a philosophy like Marxism, feminism, or the language of self-esteem, or Mennonite culture. You cannot know Christianity by being raised Mennonite. Christianity is a distinct culture. And Mennonites need to press into it just as much as anyone else. With its own vocabulary, grammar. If we can move that understanding from our head into our hearts, that's going to go a long way in reaching people in our community. It's a total attitude change. He goes on to say this. Willimon, this is a continuation. It is a strange assumption, brothers and sisters, for a contemporary American, put in Mennonite there. This is the people we're talking to tonight. It is a strange assumption for a contemporary Mennonite, a Mennonite of this day and age, to feel that he or she already has the equipment necessary to comprehend the gospel without any modification of lifestyle, without any struggle, in short, without being born again. The point is to not speak to the culture, the point is to change it. I've talked with so many Mennonite young people that say, you know, I have never really done anything bad. What are they saying? One thing they're saying is they've never seen self in them. Because it's not the things we do, it's my heart. And everyone's heart is sinful and deceitful, Mennonites included. And so, but somehow we have conveyed to our young people, to our children, that they can just get to the age of 14 and 15 and say, I want to join church, and without any modification of lifestyle, they've already got what it takes to be a Christian. Willimon says, that's a strange assumption, folks. That is a strange assumption. And I agree with him. We're talking tonight about an attitude that we have. We are not talking about our belief system. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're talking about an attitude that we have about our belief system. Hebert says this, although the message of the Bible is supercultural, above all cultures, it must be understood by people living within their own heritage and time frame. We've talked about this already in the previous nights. We have to make the gospel, we have to express it so that way they can understand it. The culture is supercultural. It's over, it's above, it's bigger than every culture. And somehow it still has to be understood in our mentality that it's this and we're not it. We press into it. Subculture. When we talk about a subculture, it is strictly a culture within a culture. It doesn't mean that it's a bad culture. It doesn't mean that it's less than any culture. It just means that it is a culture within a culture. We, as Anabaptist Mennonites, are a subculture of the Western culture of the United States of America. We are affected by both. But we have our own culture. I want to ask you a question, just to help us to try to get to think clearly on these things. Can the words culture or subculture be used to refer to any ethnic group? Yes or no? Yes. They're a culture. They have shared values, they have affections, and they have a way of thinking, logic, and they have a value system. No matter what ethnic group you go to, it's a culture or a subculture, yes. Can the words culture or subculture be used to refer to any country? Yes. You all can answer. Okay. Can these words, culture, subculture, be used to refer to a different state in the same country? Yes. I like to make fun of my Pennsylvania students, but we don't have time for that rabbit trail. Can culture, subculture be used to refer to a different city in the same state? How about a different church in the same city? Two different subcultures. How about a different family but in the same church? Yes. And that means, folks, that even on the family level, where we can have two different cultures because we have two different families, that means this family values something that this family doesn't. And this family is going to be ethnocentric about their culture. In other words, our way is the best. And this family is going to be ethnocentric about their culture. And because of that attitude, we split churches. I told Thomas last night, Thomas Mass was here, and we were talking afterwards, and I told him, you know, we lack love. We do. We lack love. I've never read in the Bible, I've never read in the words of Jesus, by this shall all men know. By this shall the community people know that you are my disciples because you took a stand on one of your preferences. I've never read that. But I have read, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples because you have love for each other. In spite of your differences, you have love for each other, and greater love has no man than this, that a man lays down his preferences for his brother. That's what my Bible reads. We lack that, folks. In the cultures below, I have three listed. I have the superculture of the kingdom of Christ. I have Mennonite culture. I have other cultures. In the cultures below, in the superculture of the kingdom of Christ, will we find backbiting in that culture? No. Not in the superculture of the kingdom. No. Will we find backbiting in the Mennonite culture? A little hard for us to say, but yes. Will we find backbiting in other cultures? Didn't have to hesitate as much on that one. What about prejudice? Will we find prejudice in the superculture of the kingdom of Jesus Christ? Will we find it in Mennonite culture? Will we find it in other cultures? Will we find gossip in the superculture of the kingdom of Jesus Christ? Will we find it in the Mennonite culture? Will we find it in other cultures? You're catching on. What about covetousness? Will we find covetousness in the superculture of the kingdom of Jesus Christ? Oh, will we find it in the Mennonite culture? Will we find it in other cultures? What about contentions? Do we find that in the superculture of the kingdom of Jesus Christ? Oh, do we find it in Mennonite culture? Yes. What about other cultures? Yes. And the list goes on. We could talk about selfishness. We could talk about jealousy, dishonesty, pride, immorality. I got a question for all of you. Why in the world do we call someone from this culture an outsider? Why? Do you see? Culture. Our shared values. The way we think. The way we feel about things. You don't sit down and teach that to your children. It's shared. It's integrated. It is an integrated, it's part of you. Those of you that know computers, you have an issue with the sound card. And so you take your computer apart because you're going to change sound cards, and you open it up, and the worst thing you can find out is that the sound card is integrated into the motherboard. That means it's not separate. It's part of it. You got to buy a whole new motherboard. You can't just change the sound. It's integrated. It's part of it. Our culture is part of us. Now, culture can change. We see our culture, the American culture, changing drastically for the worse. Culture can change for the better. But we have handed down, just like it's so part of us, this attitude, this way of thinking, just like the illustration I did last night with the three men that I shook their hands real limp, and everything that was in our notes, they did. It was Kyle tonight who, when John was reviewing the notes, and we got to that last one about relational distances, it was Kyle who gave that answer right away. I leaned over to my wife. I said, "That was Kyle. I think Kyle got the lesson last night. What do you think?" That was you that said that, right? Yes. And that wasn't staged. How did I know that those guys would react that way? Because it's part of our culture. And just like that, nobody taught them to do that. But just like that, that is so much a part of who we are, so is this attitude that we have as Mennonites. That we call people, we think somehow that we belong here. We think somehow that what we have is this. We think because our Mennonite culture, like Hebert said, our Mennonite culture has been so molded by Christianity, we think it is Christianity. And it's not. You and I have got to press into this culture. We have to get rid of these things. How do we do that? How do we get rid of these things and press into that culture? Just like these guys have to press into that culture. And somehow we call them outsiders. For years, I had one brother. Whenever he would introduce me to one of his friends that I didn't know, he would always say, "Collier comes from the outside." I could tell you stories, rabbit trails. Mark, I'm not going to shoot. I'm going to let two rabbits go, okay? Where you at, Mark? I'm going to let two rabbits go. I went to different churches. And they'd ask me what my name is. One church. "So what's your name?" "Collier Berkshire." It's like he spit it out. I'm serious. I'm not exaggerating. "Berkshire? Berkshire? Poor guy." And then he asked me, "Are you a prisoner?" I said, "Yeah." He didn't even hear the rest of what I said. He was so satisfied with my answer. I said, "Yeah, a prisoner of the Lord." He didn't hear that part. Okay, prisoner. I had another guy ask me, another church, my name, "Berkshire. Who's your dad?" Oh, I love that one. I said, "Bill," and I walked away before he could let him think about who Bill is. And we wonder why they don't stay. I had a wonderful relationship with my in-laws, Nettie's dad, Nettie's mom. The day came when I wanted to ask him if I could marry his daughter. And that was a grueling day. I mean, he didn't suspect anything, evidently. And he was working underneath the car, and I'm out there just kind of, come on, would you please come out from underneath the car so that we could talk? And finally I asked him, and he, of course, without hesitation, said yes. And it was probably 3 months later, we were out there in Ohio again, and he told me, you know, he said, two different brothers in my church came to me and said, I would never let my daughter marry an outsider. Yeah. That's sad. That's really sad. I'm so glad that told me, you know, that didn't bother me as much as that guy. You know what it told me? It told me my father-in-law totally accepts me. Yeah, that he could feel free to tell me that. But I know that that attitude exists among us. And we wonder why they leave. And when they do leave, we justify ourselves and say, well, they never stay. They never stick around. Brothers and sisters, we got an attitude problem. Amen? We got an attitude problem. I am not criticizing what we believe. Criticizing the way that we think about what we believe ourselves. We think we're the insiders. The gospel belongs to no culture. Can you read that with me? The gospel belongs to no specific culture. Could you read it again?
The gospel belongs to no specific culture.
Does that include us? Yeah. Yeah. We are called to the superculture of the kingdom just like anyone else. Christianity. This is Willimon again. I'm repeating it. It bears repeating. Christianity is a distinct culture with its own vocabulary, grammar, and practices. Brothers and sisters, it is a strange assumption for us to feel that we already have the equipment necessary to comprehend the gospel, that we are on the inside and they are on the outside. And we have struggles in our church because we bring people in without any modification of lifestyle, without being born again. Because they answer the questions right. They look right. The only way that we're going to move with that whole long list that we had, backbiting, gossip, you name it, it's in our culture. Even though our culture has been molded by Christianity, we are still dealing with issues. The only way that we're going to take care of that is not to trash Mennonites. Not to trash our culture. Not to say, I'm out of here, man. If that's the way the Mennonites are, I don't want nothing to do with it. No, that's not the answer. The biblical answer is what? Hello? To die. The biblical answer is death. Can we read that verse together? And he said to them all, that's all right? He said to them all, if any man... I think we would all agree that when he talks about whosoever will save his life, he's not talking about specifically of the physical life. He's talking about our life lived out here on this earth. And guess what? You cannot separate your culture from your life. We proved that last night. Culture is a part of who you are. And so we must... If we're going to save our culture, hang on to this and that, we're going to lose it. But whosoever
loses his life, that would be death. Whosoever dies to his culture for the sake of the kingdom, to press into the kingdom, that man is going to save it. Not going to trash it. Death. Death to what? The Bible gives three areas of death. We call it death to self, but it's death to self, it's death to family, it's death to country. Guess what all that includes? That would be culture. Myself, my family, my country, my culture. Death to my culture. Look what Paul has to say in Philippians chapter 3. He says this: if anyone else thinks he has reasons to put confidence in his culture, I have more. And he's going to die to this list. At the bottom, he talks, I count this whole list dumb. Okay, let's look at the list. Circumcised on the eighth day. That would be self. He has to die to self. Of the people of Israel. That would be country. Of the tribe of Benjamin. That would be family. A Hebrew of the Hebrews. That's country again. In regard to the law, a Pharisee. There's self. As for zeal, persecuting the church, that's self. As for legalistic righteousness, I was faultless, that's self. But whatever was profit to me, all that list that I hold dear, whatever was profit to me, I now consider loss, done for the sake of Jesus Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of pressing in to the superculture of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. Pressing in that I might know Christ Jesus my Lord. I want to know Christ. I want to get in that super culture. I got to die. Paul's culture was a very religious culture. I got to die to it so that I can press into the super culture. I might know Christ. I want to know Christ, verse 10, and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of suffering, of sharing in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death. Death. Can you die to your attitude? Your ethnocentric attitude. Can I die to my ethnocentric attitude? So we could say then, like Paul, what advantage then is there in being raised Mennonite? If this is the way it is, what advantage is there then in being raised Mennonite? What profit is there in my subculture? Much every way, folks. That's the answer. Don't trash it. The problem is your attitude. Much every way. Chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of God. Let's go to the message, which is a paraphrase, all right? Don't get hung up on the fact that I'm going to use the message. It's a paraphrase. I paraphrase, right? This guy paraphrases, whoever wrote it. This is the verse, Romans 3, verses 1 to 2. What difference does it make who's a Jew and who isn't? Who's a Mennonite and who's not? Who's been trained in God's ways and who hasn't? What difference does it make if you've been brought up in a Christian home or not? Much every way. As it turns out, it makes a lot of difference. Oh, I love this, but not the difference you and I have assumed. That's exactly what Hebert said. Our deep assumptions about reality, and we miss it. It makes a lot of difference, but not the difference that we have assumed. That we're on the inside, everybody else is on the outside. It makes a lot of difference. What is the difference? First, here's the first thing. There's the matter of being put in charge of writing down and caring for God's revelation, these holy scriptures. That's responsibility. Just put it down into one word, responsibility. You have responsibility. You and I answer the call of Christ just like anyone else from any other culture. The ground is level, folks, at the foot of the cross. And I know that you know that in your head. Let's move it to our hearts. I need Jesus just like anyone else. I'm on the outside just like anyone else. We're talking about pressing into the superculture of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. If we can change our attitudes about this, I believe people will come and they'll stay. When we can start identifying with them instead of thinking that we're the insiders, it'll make a big difference. It's our ethnocentrism that builds that wall. We've talked about that. In summary, a quick summary here. My subculture does not make me a Christian. Being Mennonite hasn't made anyone a Christian, ever. Being Mennonite has not made you a better Christian than others. It won't do it. Being Mennonite does not give you ownership of the gospel. And being Mennonite does not make you an outsider to the call of Christ. Okay, if that's the case, then what advantage is there in being raised Mennonite? Much every way. Let's look at the other side. Let's flip the coin. My subculture, being Mennonite, does give me a huge advantage. Paul put it, he said, much every way. You have a huge advantage. Doesn't make you better, but you have a huge advantage. It does not make, it does make your path as a growing Christian, it should make your path as less difficult. You don't have the history of sin. You shouldn't. And then this last one, don't miss it. Chiefly, first of all, unto them was committed the oracles of God, responsibility. The fact that you were raised Mennonite makes you more responsible, more accountable to God. And how are you doing with that? You should be more productive. You should be producing and reproducing Christians more than the guy that wasn't raised in a Christian home. You're more responsible. How are you doing with that? I wasn't raised Christian. I was raised Catholic. I was a religious setting, but I was never told that I could have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You were. Man, you knew that stuff. You knew the Bible stories. I just knew catechism. You knew the Bible stories from little up. What an advantage. What an advantage. You realize that makes you more responsible? That makes you more responsible. As we think of those things, I want to quick take a break. I'm not going to go till 9, but I do want to go a little bit longer yet. So quickly take a break. Do whatever you need to do. Quickly come back. Be back in here by 8:30. And we want to start talking about overcoming ethnocentrism. We're going to move right from seeing the problem to how can we overcome it. Brought to my attention that many of you did not get the answer to number 4. That's where that list of character traits was, and I did not call it character traits. That is the word that goes in there. An honest look at my subculture reveals character traits that exist in most every other culture. Also at the bottom, at the end of the lesson, it says to think about a time when you felt superior or looked down on someone from a different cultural or subcultural background. Why did you think you were superior? How did you treat that person? What would you do different now if you had the opportunity to live that life scene over again? You probably won't have that opportunity to live that life scene over again, but you'll have plenty more opportunities to show the love of Jesus and not an attitude of superiority. Just because we are of a different culture or subcultural background. Let's move into
I was going to switch this during the break, but I wanted to read the verse together again. Can we read the verse together? Are you ready? Ye have not chosen me. John 15, verse 16a. You know, we should really be concerned, shouldn't we? And we are. That's why you're here. And I'm glad you're here. We should really be concerned that He has chosen us and charged us, ordained us, given us a charge to bring forth fruit. How are you doing with that? How am I doing with that? I said earlier, if the results we've been having are not the best, then let's look at it. What can we do different? Because He not only wants us to bring forth fruit, but He wants our fruit to remain. That's the Lord Jesus Christ that ordained you and me to bring forth fruit. How are you doing with that? Let's move into session 5, overcoming ethnocentrism. We talked about that word. Hopefully you already defined it. The American Heritage Dictionary says it is the belief in the superiority of one's own ethnic group. And then Merriam-Webster, basically, same thing. Look at the word. Superior is in both. Characterized by or based on the attitude that one's own group is superior. Ethnocentrism. My ethnic group is central. That's the breakdown of the word. Ethnocentrism. My ethnic group is central. We are the insiders, we're the sinner, everything else is out there, we're the best. That attitude starts in every culture at a very early age. My dad can beat up your dad. My mom's better than your mom. International's better than John Deere. Ford's better than Chevy. Ohio State's better than Notre Dame. Woo, now cultures are being questioned, confronted. We've learned that at an early age. It's ethnocentrism. Mine is better. My state's better than your state. My country's better than your country. We do it right. You do it wrong. We drive on the right side of the road. Other people drive on the wrong side of the road. Not the left side. We don't say the left side. They drive on the wrong side of the road. When we enter into a culture, and even Elkhart, we work hard. They sit on their porches. Bunch of lazy people. Oh, yeah? They look at us and say, you covetous, money-hungry people. You see, everyone believes that their way of thinking is the correct way of thinking. And I told you the last few evenings that we are the instigators of the relationship. The responsibility is yours and mine to build the bridge, not theirs. We have got to overcome our ethnocentrism. We've got to overcome this feeling of superiority that is so subtle in us. It's integrated, just like the rest of culture is integrated. An ethnocentric attitude is integrated in every culture. Okay? We're not bad people because we have it. It's part of every culture. We have to get over it as Christians, pressing into the superculture of the kingdom. A student sent this to me. Probably some of you have seen this. This is the world according to Americans, right? Ethnocentrism. Here we are. Here we are, the world according to Americans. Let's start over here. This is more America. America's number one. Up here it's uninhabited. Is Laura here tonight? Lori is. Up here is uninhabited. Over here is more America. Way up here is Santa. Down here, they do our laundry and our lawns. Coffee comes from here, I think. Cruise ships go here. Here is wimps. Over here in the red is communists. And these are evildoers. Bombs go here. That's where we put our bombs, right there. And down here, zoo animals come from here. Down here is cold. And here are the call centers for us. These are the call centers. And over here is more evildoers. Here they make our stuff. These guys are making our stuff. Over here comes TVs and cameras. And down here are the kangaroos. And that's the world according to Americans. A little humorous, obviously, and yet a little true. It all revolves around us because we're the center. We're the center. Yeah, a student sent that to me. I'll tell you what kind of students I have. They're good. I said this, now we're going to read it. When we are confronted by another culture, our own is called into question. It's challenged. You do it that way, we don't do it that way. We avoid the issue. Well, we're not going to go there with them. Or we become defensive because we believe that our culture is better and other people are less civilized. I'm just not going to go there. Or I'm going to get defensive. You're not going to win people to Jesus. When you confront another culture and they wonder, why are you so busy all the time? Why are you always working? Well, because we should work. Not just sit on our porches all afternoon. Would you like to come to church with me Sunday? The solution, this is what Hebert says, and I kind of make fun of it because the problem is huge, all right? The problem is huge. And he tries to answer it with one word. This is Hebert, our textbook, and he says, the solution to ethnocentrism is empathy. You're all dismissed. Hold it! Empathy? Let's define it. The American Heritage Dictionary again. Identification with and understanding of another situation, feelings, and motives. The attribution of one's own feelings to an object. Now stop, this is more than sympathy. This is more than sympathy. This is compassion in action. In the opening last night, I noticed that Ken brought out compassion, the compassion of Jesus. And I thought, yeah, man, that's you're thinking forward. We're going to talk about that. Empathy. I want you to get this. Our first, and I'm using the illustration of the porch because a lot of America, not a lot, but a good portion of the people that we're going to witness to enjoy their porches after work. They just do. Their screen door might be hanging on one hinge. They might have the car hood up. The yard might need to be mowed. The house might be a mess. They're sitting on their porch. Can you get past our value system and learn those people? Can you identify with them? Have you ever tried to sit on the porch with them? Identify with them. Well, I don't have time to sit on the porch. You know, I mean, if I go over there, I'm going to fix his door. Duh. Sit on the porch. Identify with them. Identify with them and try to understand them. Why should I try to understand them? Obviously, their way's wrong. They're lazy. That's the only reason they're sitting on the porch. Why? Understand them. They need to come to Jesus. Do you see? I mean, I'm being more dramatic to try to help you get what we communicate without verbally communicating. It's called para-messages, body language. We need to identify with and understand them. We need to attribute our own feelings into that situation. I want to feel. I remember, I didn't know these things when we were in Cherry Creek. I didn't know a thing about missions. But somehow, I did a couple things. I remember praying, God, help me to love these Indians. God, there's no way there's no way I can identify with their lifestyle. And there was no way I could. The way they lived. There's no way I could identify with that. Oh, but I prayed that God would help me. I didn't know this stuff. But God helped me try to identify with them and understand them. I'm sure you've all heard the story, and I'm going to quickly tell it, about the Westerner that visited in an Asian country. It could be a South American country. And he went to the beach, and you've probably heard the story. And in comes this fisherman at 9 o'clock, and his boat is full of fish. And so the Westerner watches him, and he gets his fish out, and he pulls his nets out, and he lays them on the beach to dry, and he pulls his boat up on, and he's closing her up for the day. And the Westerner goes up to him and says, what are you doing? I caught my fish. Got to go home. What do you mean? It's only 9 o'clock. You should go out there again and get some more fish. Why do I need more fish? I got these. I got to go to the market. I got more fish. What do you mean, why? You can make more money. Well, what would I do with more money? Then you could buy more boats. What do I need with more boats? Then you could catch more fish. Well, why do I need more boats and more fish? So that you can earn a lot of money, and then when you get to be 55 or 60, you can retire, and then you can relax and enjoy life. He said, that's what I'm going to do today. Yeah. He said, there's nothing wrong with that way of thinking. Can you take the time to sit on the porch, to sit on the curb, to go where they're at and identify with them rather than try and teach them our Western ways? Empathy. How do I overcome ethnocentrism with empathy? How can I identify with and understand a culture so different than my own? I'm going to quickly go through these steps so that we can gain some ground. I got this here because I thought I might stop. Forget that. You did not see that stopping point. We're going to go through four quick points. Number one, be a learner. I've told you this and told you this. Be a learner. 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 Up in Elkhart, in the trailer factory, at the grocery store. You ladies, you say, well, I don't get out much. Yes, you do. You go to the grocery store, and oftentimes you see the same clerk behind the counter every week. Have you taken the time to learn them? Do you ever think about saying, you know what, I see you every week, and I don't even know your name? Oh, well, that's different. You're different than the rest of the Mennonite ladies that come here. They never talk to me. What makes you different? Jesus. Wide open door to witness. Just because you took the time to take some interest. Yes, ladies, you do have opportunities all around you. Be a learner in the new culture. We have our assumptions. We look at that lady behind the counter. We look at that guy on the porch. We look at our coworker. And we make our assumptions. We'd rather assume. But you realize that our assumptions are rooted in ignorance. Because we don't know. We don't know. And that's exactly what Hebert said in our reading earlier. That our deep assumptions of reality, they're wrong. Same thing. Premature assumptions are usually rooted in ignorance of the person being observed. Be a learner. Premature assumptions, ignorance. Number two, deal with the questions raised by this cultural pluralism. Why do you do it that way? Because it's the way we've always done it. We know that answer, don't we? That's not dealing with the question. Deal with the questions. My culture is being called into question, even challenged. Why do you work like you do? Do you have a front porch?
Yeah.
Got a nice deck in back, too. Do you ever sit on it? No, I don't have time. Why do you have the deck? Your culture is being called into question. Even challenged by this new culture, because I subconsciously believe that my culture is right, I feel threatened. And probably some of you in tonight's session have felt threatened because we've talked pretty plainly about our culture. That's a common feeling, and that's one of the reasons why it's hard for me to teach it, because I don't want to stand up here and threaten you all and make you think, man, you're getting defensive because I'm criticizing Mennonites. I know that's going to happen because it's your culture and it's being called into question and we get defensive. You feel threatened. When that happens, you're not going to win people to Jesus. If you can't deal with the questions, you can't answer the questions, you're going to get... Maybe you don't say it, but they see the hair raise. They see the paramessage. Deal with the questions. I feel threatened. If I accept that culture, if I accept that it's okay for that guy to sit on the porch, man, I've just thrown everything away. I feel threatened as soon as I accept something from another culture as being right. We have to understand. That's ethnocentrism. We have to realize that's going on so that we can deal with it, all right? I feel threatened. Number three, avoid stereotypes. This is a spin-off from that first one about making assumptions and ignorance. We like to stereotype, you know? All Chinese. I've never been to China, but I've talked to plenty of students that have been, and they'll tell you, yeah, all Chinese, man, they spit all over the sidewalks. I don't know if they do or not. But I could assume that. I could stereotype that. We feel most comfortable, we do, we feel most comfortable and in control when I can stereotype. Put them all in a bag. I'm in control. We feel most comfortable and in control when we compartmentalize everyone in a culture. They're all that way. We need to see people of other cultures as individual human beings, just like I want to be seen as a person. We need to see them as people, not as just another person that's that way, because they're of that culture. Quit stereotyping. Identify with them. See them as a real human being, not as a project. It's so easy to kind of turn this thing into a project. I'm going to win you to Jesus. See them as an individual, as a human being. Get to know them. Ask them questions. They've got a story to tell. Hear their story. Avoid stereotypes. Quit compartmentalizing. See them as an individual. And the last one, purpose in your heart. I don't care how hard it is for you to appreciate that guy sitting on the porch day after day. Purpose in your heart to appreciate that. That's not sin that he sits on the porch.
purpose in your heart to appreciate their culture. People love their own cultures, and they're most comfortable in their culture. If we wish to reach them, we must reach them in their culture, in the context of their culture, where they're at. We so often in the past, I always fold my arms because it's kind of, well, when are you going to make your changes? When are you going to come around? We have this superior attitude. Oh boy, that guy's been coming for 6 months and he hasn't made any changes yet. Now there's a difference between making biblical changes, pressing into the super culture of the kingdom, or coming to my culture. But what we want to do is move into their culture. Quit standing outside waiting for them to make the change. Get in there. Identify with them. Purpose. I am going to find some things I can appreciate about this guy. And when you can genuinely find some things to appreciate about him, they're going to sense the genuine appreciation. If you just kind of put on, they're going to sense that too. Body language. Your paramessage is heard much louder than your verbal message. So you must purpose to appreciate their culture. That's how we're going to reach them. Moving out of ethnocentrism is not an easy task. Some anthropologists, and I'd like to put in there some Christians, because it's true, unfortunately. Some Christians answer for this problem, this barrier of superiority in both, is for cultural relativism. In other words, this is the belief that all cultures are equally good. Everything about their culture is fine. Everything about my culture is fine. No, there's this superculture. There's shared values and shared wisdom and shared knowledge that we're called to. And so every culture needs to change, mine included. But cultural relativism doesn't go there. They say all cultures are fine. No culture has the right to stand in judgment over the others. We hear a lot of that today. Who are you to judge? So that's the way they deal with it. Just don't deal with it. It's all good. Hebert says this, and I say amen. The price we pay in adopting, if we're going to go there, and I'm going to say this, if you answer the question, are the heathen lost? Those who've never heard, and you say, no, they're going to go to heaven. You've adopted cultural relativism. You're saying that their culture is fine. There's no other name given among men. They gotta believe in Jesus Christ. But we buy into cultural relativism without knowing it. When we start saying, I'd like to say that the heathen are saved because that relieves me of my responsibility. Why go and be a missionary? Why would God ever tell us to go and tell if it's going to condemn them? Cultural relativism. The price we pay in adopting total cultural relativism is the loss of such things as truth and righteousness. If all explanations of reality, cultures, are equally valid, we can no longer speak of error. We can't stand in judgment. And if all behavior is justified according to its cultural, we can no longer speak of sin. There is then no need for the gospel and no reason for missions if all cultures are okay. We're not saying, when we say that you have to move into that culture and you have to purpose to appreciate things, we're not saying that you say it's all good or it's all morally okay. I'm not going to stand in judgment. No, but there are things you can appreciate in every culture. And we are trained to see the differences and the negativities, and you got to press in. Find some things that you can genuinely appreciate about that person. When these people come into our churches, press towards them, learn them, and find something that you can appreciate and take interest in about them. And they'll sense that. They'll sense that you're genuinely interested.
But if you just say, hey, that guy, wow, you know, look at that stringy hair. I could smell him when he came through the door. Whoa, man, wow. Don't even want to talk to him. You're not going to reach him for Jesus. Don't do that. Don't do that. I think I've told you before, the people that were witnessing to me, I was of a hippie mentality, bought into the hippie mentality and all the sin and immorality that goes with that. And the people that were witnessing to me had determined or wondered if there's some people that just can't be saved, that they're so far gone, that they can't be saved. And that's what they thought about me. I'm so glad that a preacher said, don't quit witnessing to him. I'm so glad. Stereotypes. Press in. I don't care what they smell like. I don't care what they look like. I don't care what you might assume about them. Get past your ethnocentricity and identify with them and try to understand them. That's empathy. And watch what God will do through your churches. Those of you that are visiting here, our church. Summary, four steps to erode ethnocentrism. Be a learner. Quit being a teacher. Quit thinking you know it all. Be a learner. Deal with the questions. Quit being threatened. You're going to be threatened. Forget about being threatened. Deal with it. And press in. Avoid the stereotypes. Purpose to appreciate. That's where we're going to quit. I want to thank you for sticking with me and allowing me to get two sessions done tonight. That's going to help us. Any comments, questions, any empty blanks? I went fast, I know. Thank you again. Let me make sure that there's nothing we want to look at the bottom. Feel free to give some thought to that whole superiority question. We might skip the section on ethnography. We might, oh yes, the gospel and culture. I want you to do this. I doubt if we'll do what I normally do in my classes with it, but I still want you to do this. Read the paragraph at the top. You are a missionary church planter. Okay, you're a missionary. You are the one that's being looked to as the spiritual leader. I don't care if you're male or female, all right? If you're female, it's a church full of women, so this is okay for you to do, all right? You are a missionary church planter. Your church has grown, and there's division over what is Christian practice, what is not. Should we do this? Should we not do this? What does the Bible mean? You are the spiritual leader. They're asking you to help them establish a confession of faith and practice. This exercise helps you discern your own theological consistency on a number of issues that various denominations have felt important. Here we go. As a missionary in a cross-cultural setting, you will need to decide the differences between the elements essential to a church in every culture, and elements which are not essential in every culture. All right? So here we go. What you're going to do is put an E, that means essential, beside something that you feel is essential. If you think it's not necessarily essential, put an N there for negotiable or not necessarily essential. E for essential. All right, so the first one, greet each other with a holy kiss. Is that essential in every culture that you're going to minister to, or is it negotiable? You decide, all right? And we'll come back tomorrow, and I might ask, we might quickly review this just to get an idea of what our churches on the mission field would look like. All right, do you understand? Any questions on that assignment? All right, let's stand for closing prayer, and then Kyle, after we pray, maybe you could lead us in a chorus.